Wars and rumors of wars, espionage, political intrigue, economic strains. How can people make sense out of what is happening in the world today? Well, that's the subject of my conversation with filmmaker Mark Sutherland in this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said. You talk of other things. Of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Hi, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. Thank you also to Global Star Radio Network, Talk America Radio Network. Okay, there'll be an edit for Kathy. Okay, gonna start over, Kath. Hi, friends. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. Thanks also to Global Star Radio Network, Talk America Radio Network, and Prepper Broadcasting Network that carry Soaring Eagle Radio. You can also listen to the show on our website, SoaringEagleRadio.com. Of course, we're on Twitter, Soaring Eagle Rad, Soaring Eagle R-A-D, Rad. We're on Facebook and all of the normal social media places. I am very blessed today to have with me on Soaring Eagle Radio my dear friend from across the pond, Mark Sutherland. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi, Mike. It's an absolute privilege to be here, and thank you very much indeed for the invitation. Well, I bring you greetings from a not so sunny this side of the pond.
Hmm. Yes, well, I woke up this morning hoping we would see sun here in Ohio, and lo and behold, it's a beautiful morning. So, but yesterday was raining and overcast, so that's probably very similar to what you're experiencing over there in Great Britain. Mark, I just want to let folks know that we met in Dallas this past March at the Hear the Watchman conference, and it was really a really kind of a happenstance. I think that our dear friend, mutual friend, and brother, Pastor Casper, would have got us introduced, but I just happened to be walking past, and he grabbed me and introduced us, and boy, what a tremendous joy it is to have met you, Mark, and to hear your story and what's going on over there in Great Britain. So I guess that's what we really want to launch off on is to talk about your awakening, really. And you shared your testimony with me about how all this came about, how you ended up in Dallas. And so I wonder if we could start there, if you'd share a little bit about that.
No problem. I had the privilege to meet you and Kathy and everyone at the Hear the Watchman in Dallas late March. And I just want to say that your complete analysis of that whole conference, Mike, it was fantastic, because something that you said about how everyone was in synergy, you know, none of you as the people that were giving the talks have really spoken to each other, and how the whole synergy and all that locked together was totally Father. That was incredible. I flew out to Dallas, frankly, as I've said, to confirm the fact that I was not going mad. I wasn't going round the bend, because I listened to various people on your side of the pond, like Dave Hodges, Common Sense Show, Doug and Joe, Hagman, etc., and go on Steve Quayle's sites, and have listened to Sharon and Derek Gilbert, etc. So I am very, very grateful for how God is using all of you on your side of the pond, because we don't necessarily have that. So in 2010, after a little interesting fracas with a church and having my wife and I and our family, we left. I then began to really wake up. I remember going on a dear friend of mine showing something on Steve Quayle's site. And I then started going down the rabbit hole. As I say, I then turned back, grabbed my Bible, and then went down this rabbit hole that has led me to various subjects, to say the least. And then to really wake up and have a totally and utterly different worldview that puts us out of step with sort of most of the mainstream church and most a lot of people within our world. So that was part of it. And I flew out to Dallas. And when I flew out there, Mike, I met family. It was an astounding experience for me. I flew, 9,000 miles. And to put it in context for people listening on your side, on your side of the pond, is the fact that the UK fits into Texas about five times, you know, just to give you the size of your continent. And I'm not saying that flying out there was easy. There's a cost and all the rest, and it was quite a bit of a build up. And the previous year I really wanted to go. There was a bit of opposition. But I finally made it. And I'm extremely glad I have, because as I say, I've met family, incredible connections. And just to affirm, like, what you do and what everyone else does, we are in this massive, we are in the battle for our lives. And the information that we are trying to disseminate and get out to God's people is so needed. And as you, I was listening to your interview on Doug and Joe shows last night. You know, we are in this, as Alex Jones says, we're in this information war. And people are under a delusion, and people are not seeking the truth. And then, of course, you and I and others we just get accused of being deluded ourselves. so that was my journey, and it was fascinating to me. As soon as I got off the plane, and I got on the shuttle bus to get from Dallas Airport to the hotel. And then suddenly, you know, various people that I was listening to suddenly climbed on, you know, that I listened to on this side of the pond, climbed on the bus. And it isn't about celebrity watch, Mike. Right. I don't do that. I work with enough of those people at times. I'm well over that. And I just want to say this, that the humility from the stage was incredible, because everyone is approachable. Yes. Everyone is accessible.
Yes.
Everyone just wants the people of God to get the knowledge to really see their relationship with God grow. And it, you know, for me, it was great to meet everyone, and people like L.A. Marzulli and all the rest. So I just want to say that. So I came back extremely encouraged, as I say, and I suppose it's a bit of a long-winded answer, extremely encouraged, and very, very grateful for what Mike and Jeannie do with the Hear the Watchman conference. And it's a bit of a plug there, because it's incredible what God has led them to put on, and the way that, and everyone that's involved. So yeah. It's astounding. So as I say again, I went over there and I felt I came back and I met family, which I'm in constant contact with, because when we come across other people that are of like mind, that affirm the fact that we are not, you know, we're not going to check ourselves into a mental asylum. Mm-hmm. And I can honestly say to you that there are times when that is closed, that has been closed with a build up to this, because mm-hmm. you know, one thing that the enemy does is to really work hard to isolate you.
Yes, that's right.
And we then work hard to stay with Father and then to find out who is woken up, who is awake.
Yeah.
And I do have a number of friends that are. So, Mike, that's my sort of long-winded answer on that.
No, that was perfect. That was perfect, Mark. And a couple of things that you said that I want to grab a hold of and just highlight for our listeners, just in the event that there might be someone that has stumbled across Soaring Eagle Radio, what is this all about, and who is this Mark Sutherland guy, and so they're listening today, they don't have any idea what we're alluding to when we talk about being awake, understanding the truth. Something that you said that I think will be helpful for that person, or for anyone who's just newly awakened and beginning to grasp that we really do, globally speaking, we really do live in this matrix of sorts where the elitists, their primary mission, until it's no longer useful for them, is to keep the entire earth anesthetized. In other words, in some kind of semi-coma, so that they don't really put things together. And you said when you find out the truth, you immediately realize that you're out of step with everyone else. Boy, that was like a ding, ding, ding in the mind, because that was The Matrix. That was the movie, The Matrix. And it's so very true, Mark, when you do begin to understand, when you get that peek behind the wizard's curtain, and you see the wizard manipulating all of those levers for the fire and the image and all this stuff, you realize this is all a fraud. All of it's a fraud. Everything that goes on the nightly news, on the political stage, it's all being orchestrated, every bit of it. And then the other piece is this, and this is why. This brings it all together and summarizes what you said and the point that I'm making here, Mark, is that information is power. Information is power. Now, people have heard that many, many times, no doubt, but they've never really considered what that means. If information is power, and it is, then evil people clamor for total and complete power. And that's what's going on in the world today, don't you think?
I couldn't agree with you more. And absolutely, and there is a responsibility for people to go and find out the truth. And of course, it's the classic thing where we then say, "Well, why us? How come we've actually sort of woken up?" I mean, part of that journey for me, Mike, is, without giving an obvious plug, is one of the reasons why I have also become absorbed in your politics on that side of the pond is because I made a short film called Between Lambs and Lions, which I'd love to make the longer version, where we take the book of Daniel and set it amongst the political machinations of Washington politics. And it depicts a time when the Republic, you know, the Star Spangled Banner is banned. And basically the Republic, the Constitution, has been assigned to a museum, and the Republic has gone. And I've just posted that on your Facebook page. I'd love people to go and see it. But that has all been part of this journey. And, of course, we're then looking at, Barack Hussein Obama, who he is, what his roots were. And then for me, having a number of different books flying into my house, which I do on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I would urge people to buy physical books. Don't rely on the digital answer, because one day all of that can be switched off.
Yes. Yeah.
And I remember getting a few years ago on a holiday that we were away as a family, and I ordered a book, which I'm looking at here, Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer's book, The Post-American President.
Yeah.
Now, those two people on this side of the pond are seen as people that, you know, the Prime Minister of our country now actually banned them from coming in this country. And I'd just like to say that Robert Spencer, when I think he was in Iceland recently, some people tried to actually poison him.
Yes.
So these are real. These things are going on. And then reading a number of books, reading E.G. Griffin's book, The Creature of Jekyll Island, and explaining the whole banking system, looking at the fact that, Karl Marx, Engels come from a very privileged background.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, you know, Marx writing the whole Marxist theology, the communist framework, and then being paid by various banks to, you know, cross Europe and go over to Russia and to create the revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So this is this kind of thing. Now, we only know this if we're prepared to actually do the research and find out what's going on. And you're bang on the money, my friend, when we say, and we know about the predictive programming within mm-hmm. Hollywood and certain films coming out. And I suppose for me, constantly, I'm then stepping back and I cannot believe this. I cannot believe this. I'm now reading things in a different way. And of course, with The Matrix, we take the red pill, we take the blue pill. And we have been in this massive control cauldron.
Yes.
And we look back to what happened within the First World War, what happened within the Second World War, European history, us actually joining the EU. And I'd like to particularly, if I may, Mike, in a way, is touch on the EU.
Oh, yes,
touch
please.
Touch on a brief history.
Yes.
Now, I filmed a talk, which is called Flexit the Movie, and two people wrote a book, Christopher Booker and Richard North. Christopher Booker regularly writes in the Sunday Telegraph on this side of the pond. And they wrote a book called The History of Europe and the Great Deception. And what they did, they went through the old government papers that have been filed away, and then they have a lock on them that after 30, 40, 50 years, they're then revealed. So the 30-year lock had come off, and they went through the papers. So we are just, in recent history, so in 1924, Jean Monnet and Arthur Sauter set up the foundation of what's called of the European Union. You could argue that it goes back 300-500 years, well before there, because there were constant, we as a nation were constantly playing one European country off against another, like other European countries were. And you would have provinces, of course, you would have dukedoms, you would have kings and queens. And you would make sure that there were two or three powerhouses so they could play off each other and keep each other in check.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that's one sense explaining it in very simple terms. But Arthur Sauter was a British civil servant, and Jean Monnet, Frenchman, at one point made a load of money, I think, smuggling whiskey or in Canada. But they had a seat of the League of Nations. That's what is incredible. The League of Nations pre the United Nations. So for people listening to this, by 1956, the six founding countries of the EU had come together. Now, it came together after with the First World War. They then sought to work out a way that various countries would not be firing at each other anymore and causing awful deaths and destruction. And that was the beginning of the drive for it. Jean Monnet was disappointed that the plan would not stop the Second World War. So the Second World War happened and all that destruction. And we all know the spiritual consequences of that. We look at what's happened with all the German scientists going into America, some extent going, of course, into Russia, etc. And that is another story, but there's spiritual consequences of that. So in 1956, the incredible sort of miracle of German manufacturing and the establishment of that within the Marshall Plan had begun to really, really take off. So we as a country were looking at Europe. We had just had, around about that time, I think 1957, 58, was the Suez Crisis. But just before this as a nation, and this is the important thing, so in 1945, we then turned our back on the Jews and stopping the Jewish people returning to Israel. We were, you know, blockading ships. We were firing at people who wanted to land there to go into the land of Israel. And that's why, in my own opinion, and other people that are greater than me, that we had actually, you know, we had lost our empire by 1948. Because of the way that we treated the Jewish nation, yeah. And Israel was founded in 1948, as you know. I don't have to tell anyone, tell you that. So in 1948, that happened, and there is a correlation. So we then had the Suez Crisis in 1957, 58, where we sided with the French and the Israelis to sort this out. Then the American government at that time pulled the plug on us. The reason why I'm saying that is we then as a nation lost our nerve, as a very, very close friend of mine reminded me of this last night, brilliantly just telling me a load of this. But we lost our nerve. So we were then looking for how could we then find a body of people to go into and reassure ourselves as a nation. Now, rationing for us as a nation didn't stop until 1956. So the war ended in 1945. We had rationing up until 1956. So European Union is formed. People are looking over the pond. Our then previous Prime Minister Ted Heath and Harold Macmillan by 1958 had begun to plan to join us to join the European Union. You know, 45 to 1958. Not that long ago, not a bigger distance. So in 1961, we applied. We got turned down. Hugh Gaitskell then, a Labour MP, minister, old statesman, turned around and said that if we joined the European Union, it would be the end of 1,000 years of history. By 1968, we applied again. Charles de Gaulle said, you know, why do you want to join the European Union? You trade with the rest of the world. Then by 1973, we were literally pleading to come in. And we went into bondage. 1972, there was an election. Ted Heath said, if I win, I will take you into the EU. Actually, it was the common market where we would trade with other countries where there were no trading barriers. And the nearest thing to trying to, for Americans to then understand that is that I think within states, that is where there was sort of trading barriers and laws then and certain taxes paid, because up until the Federal Reserve, I don't necessarily think you had sort of like a personal tax system. So again, it comes down to banking control. So in 1972, Heath won. 73, we were just taken in. It was a small paragraph, I believe, in regard to the manifesto, that we would go into the common market, which then became political union. By 2010, people were hoodwinked. The whole idea of the European experiment that Jean Monnet and Arthur Salter set up, and this is the key thing, Mike, is that treaty by treaty, by stealth, the democratic nation, the democracy of each individual nation would be taken away. In 1973, that was not explained to the British people. Now, I have had the privilege, I'm not saying this to show off, I've had the privilege to be in the room with someone who fought to save the British fishing industry. Because in 1973, just before that, someone said to Ted Heath, you know that if we join the European Union, it's the common market, it's the end of the fishing industry. And Ted Heath said, how many people in the fishing industry? I won't do a bad impersonation. And he said... They said 22,000, Prime Minister. They said, well, that's an insignificant vote. Well, they hadn't worked out the fact that that would kill various small fishing villages up and down this country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. And then all the spin-offs from that, those industries, families, etc. So that is what happened. We literally sold our soul, but it was never, ever explained. So when you and I right now, we're talking about information and this information war, and you've been through that mm-hmm. with the presidential race that went on.
Yes.
President Donald Trump winning last November. And I'm saying deliberately President Donald Trump, because we need to say that mm-hmm. where the left just want to keep going Donald Trump. Right. He is the president of your country. Yeah. And I've never seen such denigration of that office on your side of the pond by the left and our side of the pond by the left. So going back then to what happened with that referendum, there has been these parallels, Mike. The parallels are incredible, are out, you know, it's a real sort of revelation to me on a personal level. And then jumping ahead, so as we, by 1992, within various businesses, now we as a country, you know, we have an entrepreneurial bent. We were the center of the Industrial Revolution, and I believe that because of how we had blessed the Jews. We look back to the King James Bible, and just before that, people, you know, Cromwell let the Jews back into this country. Edward Longshanks, who I think is depicted in the Braveheart movie, you know, starring Mel Gibson, of William Wallace and all that, is that Edward Longshanks kicked out the Jews. Cromwell let the Jews back into our nation, and we've been blessed from that. And I believe that's why we then had the Industrial Revolution. And as I said earlier, there's a parallel constant. And the same for you as your nation and other nations around the world, because Genesis 12 says that, in how we bless the Jews and bless Israel.
Yes.
So by 1992, there was all this paperwork and all this control and stuff like that coming down from the European Union. And we have seen generations, and including myself, who have just grown up with the European Union. And if people would go and educate themselves by reading books like The History of Europe and The Great Deception, which I have read most of that, and it confirmed my own thoughts and steam come out of my ears, e.g., coming back to what you're saying, people have to educate themselves. And many people, frankly, cannot be bothered. And we're even living in an age with YouTube, etc. And there is no excuse, you know. And I thank God for what you're doing and what Doug and Joe, and as I say, Dave Hodges and Sheila Selinsky and Steve Quayle and everyone are doing. And if I've missed anyone out, you know who you are. And bless you. On your side, on your side of the pond. So bringing up today, you're aware we've just had an election.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, in some ways, I could say that I felt I've been quite caught on the hop. I've had to step away from a few things, because I've been rather surprised with some of the info that's come out, but then again, not on one level. On the one hand, it's we could say that if Theresa May had won a landslide victory, then things would be quite different. But actually, on a personal level, right now, I'm quite glad that she hasn't, because things have been revealed.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've had... We had the referendum for the European Union last year. You know, on your side of the pond, and for us on this side of the pond, the parallels in regard to the establishment and the elites has been shocking.
Yes.
So 17,410,752 people, with a majority of over a million, voted out to leave the European Union. And as soon as we did that, we're then called xenophobes, racists,
yep.
You know, white members of the Ku Klux Klan or whatever.
Yeah.
Unbelievable
yeah.
comments. And I will say this, that people who voted to leave the European Union were all people from, you know, all different backgrounds and colours and all the rest. And I'm even, you know, it does annoy me that I have to say it in many ways. But that's the truth, because those people went and educated themselves, and people thought, no, we've had enough. And I love Europe, but I do not like European governance. And the European governance is 26 unelected governors. It's a supranational government. In other words, it's a communist system.
Yes.
I cannot vote for those governors. They are appointed. It's like one big super civil servant governmental loving. And that's how it was designed. And it is not democratic. It's taking away the democracy. So in other words, if we then go back quite rightly, we look from a scriptural point of view, this is the Tower of Babel 2. This is that on speed. And the whole thing with the whole aspect, and please don't think I'm being clever. I listen to a lot of people and try and read and come to my own conclusions. And I'm very glad of the amount of inputs that come to me. The bottom line is, as you know, like with the internet, we're seeing that's it, the Tower of Babel, what's happening with CERN and all the rest.
Yes.
We've never seen it, such an integrated system of control. So we voted to leave, and of course the elites have gone absolutely, you know, they threw their toys out of their pram and went mental over that. Now, we have just had an election. The election was called by Theresa May because she felt she needed a clear mandate to get rid of the anti-Brexit, the Remainers or the Ramoners who were moaning, right?
Yeah.
Now, she made a particular calculation. Now, what we have to remember is that Theresa May voted to remain in the European Union. David Cameron stood down. Now, a load of this for our own nation, the parallels between Bill Clinton, between Tony Blair, and how they came about is incredible. Bill Clinton comes into power. The wonderful Larry Nichols explains so much of that. And if no one's bought his book On Your Side of the Pond, 28 Years to Nowhere, go and get it and educate yourselves very quickly. So Larry explains all that as the Clinton insider. And then we, the Labour Party, adopted Tony Blair because they wanted some young guy and all the rest. So the parallels are so strong. And we have to recently go back in our own history from 1997. The reason why I'm saying that, where on your side of the pond, you found out that, you know, Democrats and Republicans at the top, they're both exactly the same.
Yep.
For us to even discover that phrase called RINO, you know, Republican in name only, yep. I've found that shocking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to work out what our own phrase is.
Yeah, yeah.
But the European referendum, I even said it, when you've got people at the top of the Conservative Party, people at the top of the Labour Party, people at the top of the Liberal Party, people at the top of the Green Party and every other party and Uncle Tom Cobbley and all turn around and saying, you know, you need to stay in the European Union. I actually said it sounds as though we live in a one-party state. We do.
Yeah.
Because it's people that want to stay within the European Union. So jumping now to what's happened. Theresa May on the 23rd of December, and it is about Israel for us as a nation. This is not a popular thing to say over here. Even the mainstream church don't get it. I've got a number of friends who are Christians that don't get it. If you pray for the peace of Jerusalem, you know, we will be blessed as a nation. Now, that doesn't mean that there are certain things at times that we may not be comfortable with or we question. But that is in Scripture. And now, as a country, we're being blessed by that. So the 23rd of December last year, you know, we then colluded with the Obama administration to vote against in regard to basically putting the nation of Israel in jeopardy. Now, I've forgotten the UN mandate, the number that was voted for. So our civil servants were complicit in that. Our Foreign Office policy was complicit in all of that. Now, yes. I would then say that a number of events that have gone on in regard to our nation are to do with that. And of course, within the secular society, it turns around and says, well, God doesn't exist. Within the European Union, 2010, you have political union, and you have a setup that says, basically, we deny God. Now, it's, you know, the whole issue of enlightenment. We look back to the Reformation and all the rest, and the history of that. Within the European Union, it's no, we want to deny God. So 2010, it was the constitution of Europe came about under the Lisbon Treaty. They might not have called it the constitution, but that's what it was.
Yeah.
So jumping ahead, I do apologize. Come back to December the 23rd and what Theresa May and her government did. So at 1 minute giving a speech saying, I want to back Israel, etc., as I think an Israeli embassy. And it's a bit like, you know, as you have that phrase, you're talking out both sides of your mouth.
Yes.
There's an element, a huge element of that. So she then calls an election. She was 20-30 points ahead in the polls, you know, those dreaded polls, Mike, that said that President Donald Trump would not win the election, you know, and we remember that as something that I would never forget, looking at various people's face from CNN on your side of the pond as the shock suddenly sunk in, that they basically had their backside whooped and that they had lost. Mm-hmm. So we never believed the polls. So it worked in reverse over here. Now, I stepped back a bit politically from that. And I then discovered, much to my annoyance, is that in many ways, Theresa May had been promoted beyond her ability.
Mm.
And she had two advisors, one called Fiona Hill and another person called Nick Timothy. I think I've got their names right. That she had when she was at the Home Office. Now, suddenly, it's as though the woman couldn't even sneeze unless she asked these two people. These were not elected officials. Mm-hmm. And we have found ourselves within the European Union, within politics, where people have got these advisors around them. Then we find out that basically the manifesto that was written by the Tory party, and as a dear friend of mine has explained to me, you know, that manifesto was like to the left of Karl Marx.
Oh, man.
You know, she is a statist. She believes in big government. So though a lot of the people that support remaining in the European Union, like Michael Heseltine and Kenneth Clark, who are names over here that people could then look at, and who Kenneth Clark has, excuse me, has actually attended a Bilderberg meeting. I'll just throw that one out there. Along with David Cameron's previous Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne. excuse me, sorry. They are people that believe in big government. They believe that government can solve things. Now, I don't have to give you guys a lesson in regard to your constitution and the fact that, you know, we passionately believe in having small government. We passionately believe in people being responsible for their own ship, the guiding them. And as Christians, it's our walk with God and working that out, and what God is calling us to do. So jumping ahead to the election, she then lost 13 seats. And we then have Jeremy Corbyn, an interesting individual, who cannot be criticized for the fact that he is consistent. He is left-wing. He's a socialist, if not bordering on total Marxist. His number two is a communist. And by promising everyone everything, by promising a spending of $250 billion, where you get that from, I suppose what you do is just ask the Bank of England just to print money. A bit like, you know, on your side of the pond, which the previous president had done, where we just keep quantitative easing mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 infinitum. Mm-hmm. And every time your dollar is devalued and our pound is devalued. People haven't worked that out. So we've got this whole sort of public sector ethos. So she lost 13 seats. And suddenly the left wing, it is huge. And the parallels on both sides of the pond in regard to progressive thinking. And we've just had an incident where the leader of the Liberal Party, Tim Farron, has stepped down. So we have, because suddenly, as someone, he would say, I'm a Christian, but I can't lead the Liberal Party because the Bible is clear in regard to certain sexual behavior, and you are asking me to whether this is a sin, homosexuality is a sin, and bloody blah, and you're haranguing me and you're constantly having a go at me, and I'm trying to walk a path between what our party says and what my own personal faith says. And in the end, he can't equate the two, so he resigned. And we have reached a point where for Christians to be in the public square as Christians, standing four square on the Bible, they don't want us to do that anymore.
That's true. They don't
want us to be there anymore.
Yeah.
If they could, the next thing would be we'll create a program, which is, it's called Lynch a Christian, and we'll take them to Parliament Square and we'll burn them.
Yeah.
Or we'll crucify them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whoever's listening to this may think, oh, you're exaggerating. No. Because the whole thinking within the school system, etc., and the way it's gone, and we've reached a point, and you mentioned this last night on Doug and Joe's show, where it's the alternative media. We can't have an alternative viewpoint. You know as well as I do that politics is war without shedding blood.
Yes.
It's a way of having a discussion. And we are reaching, it seems as though we're reaching a point on both sides of the pond where, if I address the American situation, where are progressives, and we look at that awful shooting of the Republican congressman at the baseball game, to say that this kind of thing is acceptable. Suddenly the discourse, we can't have a discourse. We can't have a different point of view.
Yeah.
We wish to get, the left say, we wish to get rid of family. We wish to break up marriages. We wish to get rid of the Judeo-Christian heritage of our country, your country, of the world. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
And then what we do is we side with political Islam, jihadism, and all the rest, because that suits our purpose. So we have reached the point, Mike, where, and I'm very conscious of suddenly saying a heck of a lot without even taking a break, so please just butt in. We have reached a point, and Derek Prince has explained this brilliantly in teachings about the false church. And I remember, I think well over a year ago, Joe Hagman was explaining this on one show about the parable of the wheat and the tares and how they grow up together. And it shook me rigid being reminded of that. And we're now seeing the false church, emerging church, all of that. And I know some of those leaders over here, as in Nome, I don't have anything to do with them now. We're seeing this emerging church. We're seeing the true church and a lie. And we're seeing the fact that, as you said, if we do not push back, it's going to get even more uncomfortable. So,
yes, yeah, for sure.
The election, for me, revealed the truth. I have been, over the last week, very deeply concerned and rather upset that people cannot see it. as in the fact that it seems as though we're nearly on the border of an insurrection in this country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we had a Queen's speech. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, in many ways, Theresa May has actually asked for this. And there's a hubristic approach, thinking, oh, we're going to easily win this. We're now seeing, you know, under President Macron turning round to us and going, well, I know you put Article 50 in, but you can always, you know, turn your back on that. Mm-hmm. Of course, Theresa May has actually put Article 50 in. God has really used her to do that. But the gap between the generations, the gap between me at the age of 53 and the then, you know, our 25-year-olds, our 35-year-olds, our 40, is shocking.
Mm-hmm.
The gap, the lack of understanding politically of what's going on. Yeah. And I would say, of course, I've been there. I've been there myself.
Yes.
Within that. None of this is talked about within church. It's, as someone says on your side of the pond, it's, you know, kumbaya and grab the guitar and have a nice time and
that's right.
Deny anything that's going on.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what, Mark? Let me interject something here, because everything that you've said is spot on, perfect. You are painting a beautiful picture, a mosaic of things as they really are, folks. And I hope that our listeners are grasping this, Mark. And within everything that you've said, I've been jotting down notes furiously, because there are so many points of contact in the narrative that you've just presented. And I want to start with this one, Mark, and then of course I'll toss it back to you and hear your thoughts. But what we're seeing today happening on both sides of the pond, as we refer to it, what's going on today in Great Britain, what's going on today in America, is really the Nietzschean nightmare, if we could call it that, the Nietzsche axiom that might makes right. It doesn't matter if it's morally right in God's eyes. It doesn't matter if it's following what God has revealed to us and how we are to live and treat one another. And this was one of the things that I brought up about the tragedy in James White's stunt of bringing in a jihadi imam into a Christian church in Memphis, Tennessee. There is no such thing as the concept of human beings in Islam. There is no such thing as the integrity, the sanctity of human life within Islam. Everything outside of Islam is to be used for Islam's advancement, and people are not grasping that. So divide and conquer, that's the strategy, and I see this on both sides. I see it here in America. I see it in Europe, not just in Great Britain. I see it in France. And I see that the progressives, the Marxists, and that's just the political manifestation of the global elitists, they'll use whatever political ideology will work for them. And so they've grabbed a hold of Marxism, progressivism, however you want to define it, and they're using that as a bludgeon against freedom and liberty-minded people. But I see a lot of similarities between that and Islamic Jihad, or real Islam, Mark. They're always at war. They're always at war. Progressives, Marxists, Islam is always at war, and in one of two ways, either to defend their activities, and we see that so many Muslim Islamic apologists, as soon as another atrocity, a murderous, barbarous act is committed, we've got all these people on the left that jump to their defense. I mean, it's psychotic is what it is. So they're either defending their activities or they're attacking freedom and liberty-minded people. And they do that, and I think I made this point last night on the Hagmans, they attack freedom and liberty-minded people by trying to, well, they don't just suggest, they state it, that loving freedom and liberty And having the opportunity to think for yourself and to band together as individuals into a cohesive unit is somehow racist, that it's somehow a white supremacist. They toss around nationalism as if that's something that should be put down and destroyed, that nationalism is evil. But the fact of the matter is that the progressives, the Marxists, the global elites, the puppeteers, I call them, that are really pulling the strings behind all of this, Mark, they are trying to destroy the family, the community group, churches, because they understand that if they can get down to the basic unit, if they can separate everybody and just make the world's population as individuals, they're much easier to manipulate and herd into the enslavement that they're really after. Now, all of that may sound like, wow, Mike, seriously? But that's the kind of this kind of dialogue we're having, Mark, and this kind of information, the things that we're talking about, this needs to be talked about from pulpits. This needs to be talked about in front of congregations. Christians need to grasp this information and understand what is happening to them, or else they're all going to be in internment camps before it's over.
I couldn't agree with you more. And there's a certain element of a responsibility that I may have in regard to that. There's other things to do. I personally would love, because of, you know, knowing you and others, I personally would love to, I need to get something radio wise going over here so we can do that and have that. Yeah. It has to happen, and I'm getting my head around that, and I need some more advice on that. But you've nailed it, because it's not going to be happening in churches, because the left wing tolerance thing has completely invaded so many churches. We have to be tolerant.
Yes.
Now, I've had the privilege to spend some time in South America, and, you know, the whole thing of liberation theology. And I remember out there met a lovely couple where she used to be a communist, part of a local communist campesino from a very good background, then left and became a Christian. And, you know, it was the time of Sendero Luminoso and all the rest. And then we look at Venezuela, and we've just got someone who is leading the Labour Party in this country, who is what's called, from a group called Momentum, who are Marxists, who have taken over the Labour Party from what we'd call like New Labour, who are sort of watered down socialists. Now, they're very, they're not going to hide what they want to do, and it's totally and utterly anti-Christian. And what it is because then it appeals to people of, well, we need to care for people, feed the poor, be nice to the planet, and do all these things. And let's not even, don't start me on climate change. I mean, I'm completely out of step with millions of people over here, and thank God for books like Sheila Zelinsky's Green Gospel, which is astounding, you know, and other things. And we're finding that. We're seeing that, and other people's books and stuff on that, where the whole thing is green on the outside, as that book says, or paraphrase, but it's red and Marxism on the inside. And people like Dinesh D'Souza, et cetera, have explained Barack Hussein Obama's, you know, background and all the rest, and why he thought the way he did, and why he's so anti-American, what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to even say that, people are going, well, what are you going on about? Seems a really nice person. Does very well on speeches and on the in regard to the BBC and bloody blah. And I think he left Chicago after being at Jeremiah Wright's church, bloody blah, becomes the president. And the only time he ever went back to Chicago was when he made his exit speech. And, you know, what stuff has he actually done to actually stop the amount of killings, etc., that are on the streets of Chicago? So I'm not saying that to be clever or have a go. What I'm asking people is to really examine exactly what is going on. And you're absolutely right. This is tyranny. Now, you have been given a door wedge in regard to President Trump.
Yes.
You've been given a door wedge. Now, I urge him, and I ask people to really pray that you know, he will move that embassy to the American embassy to Jerusalem as fast as he can. Now,
yes,
whether he's, we don't want to necessarily go into even more where people call us conspiratorial in regard to why is Jared out there and Jared Kushner and all the rest and what's going on. I don't want to go down that road, but I'm just asking him to do that. Mm-hmm. Now, he, the fight that you went on, he has been given, you have been given this door wedge, and still, and now it's been ranked up to have the violence on the street. Look, we look at Berkeley, etc., and what happened. Over here, we were given the opportunity to vote to leave the EU. And the other important thing is that when David Cameron won the election in 2010, he just before that, he just thought he could have kicked that issue, kicked that can down the road. And when he then shared power with the Liberals, who were profoundly pro-EU, and the ex-leader of the Liberal Party, Nick Clegg, used to work, was an EU, an MEP, and a real mentored by Leon Britton, who was total Mr. European Union. I mean, this is the other key thing. There's always been this understandable love affair between Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, mm-hmm. and they got on brilliantly. And one of the things, now I may have not at that time, we grow up, we view things in a different light, but Margaret Thatcher in 1975, when she became leader of the Conservative Party, was very much pro-EU. By the time of 1998, she was anti-EU, and 1990 she then was kicked out, and her own party kicked her out. But you could also, one of the reasons why, and it's not really talked about, is because of her anti-beginning, having sat at European Union meetings and working it out that this doesn't work. And in her last biography, I think in 2003, she talked about this great experiment, which was just an appalling thing to do. So at the Bruges and the Bruges group grew, and a meeting at Bruges, she then just turned around and said, no, 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 Mr. Delors. So she woke up. So going back to our election in that sense is that, and I think you've got the same on your side of the pond totally, where in many ways there are some people that seem to like their servitude. There are some people that want to stay in Egypt.
Yeah.
They don't want to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because, and this is a challenge. I'm talking to me, Mike. I am really talking to me about what can I do? What else can I do? I mean, the reason I made Between Lambs and Lions is that I was passionate about trying to help to wake people up.
Yeah.
There's another short film that desperately trying to finish that Russia or Eastern Europe is the subject, which is rather interesting.
Mm.
So desperately trying to get that out.
Yeah.
So it's how do we wake people up? But it is the gospel. But now we're living in an age where we look at what happened in Russia and the persecution, and we are now on the edge of, we're going to see, I believe, an underground church, a church go underground and flourish.
Yeah.
That's where we're reached. We're going to be turning. When you have got, I saw it today, and I'm trying to think. When you've got Eastern European countries wanting to put up statues of Ronald Reagan and John Paul II to celebrate the fact that the wall came down in 1989, doesn't that tell you something? Where on your side of the pond, on our side of the pond, certain people would wish to create that kind of statism, have forgotten how many people Stalin killed, Lenin and all the rest, have then forgotten Mao, have then forgotten Khmer Rouge. I could go on.
Yes, right.
And then what's happened in Venezuela. But it's a spirit.
It's
a spirit.
Yeah.
And the wall came down in 1989, and it came over to Europe in what's in the guise of, and over to you in the guise of political correctness.
Yes.
That's the spirit.
Yeah.
And if it, again, just saying, we are in the biggest spiritual battle of our lives. And as Steve Quayle has often said, there is no political solution for a spiritual problem.
That's absolutely.
And that's where we were right. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
On both sides of of the pond and our debates is exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
that's a good way to frame it, Mark. And let me just say this for our listeners to grasp exactly the point that Mark is making. Statism, we call it over here the nanny state.
Yeah.
Statism, the idea that government's responsibility is to take care of somebody from cradle to grave, to make sure that they have all of their needs met at least on a minimum basis, has created really the greatest heist in the history of the world, the transfer of wealth from the producers to the non-producers. And at some point, Mark, at some point, the people that are pulling all of these levers, they're just going to stop with the game. And all of these people that they have enslaved through government handouts, through convincing them that they should receive these by right, the game's going to be up, but it's going to be too late for all of those folks. And so the point that you're getting at is this. There's only one truth that's going to wake people up, and that is the gospel of Jesus Christ. So we must never forget that we should always be pressing that upon people, that only Jesus saves. No man, no political system, no ideology, no movement. It is the God-man Jesus Christ that saves. So that's always, and that really does frame what we do and how we go about doing it, doesn't it, Mark?
I couldn't agree with you more, and it is our biggest challenge. That person is my biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. How do we do that in every day? You're trying to talk to people, even had that conversation today, just go out and about, mm-hmm. and you're buying things and you're just suggesting things that can help wake people up to then lead them even more to that discussion. You're absolutely right. And we are, as I say, I just urge people to pray, and I'd appreciate people praying for our nation, as I know that people are praying for your nation on this side of the pond.
Yeah.
We are in this battle together, and that's why I say when I flew to Dallas and I found family, because I have. And I just want to publicly thank you for being able to have this outlet and being able to have this discussion, because we've got to educate each other.
Yeah.
We have to pray. We have to pray.
Yes.
Desperately about what's going on.
Yes.
Because many people are not.
Yeah, that's a fact. Well, Mark, we're all out of time for today, but this deserves many more conversations and follow-ups, and I appreciate your flexibility. Just so our listeners understand, we're at a 5-hour difference, so it's already afternoon there in the UK, and Mark's been gracious enough to carve out some time for us to sit down and chat about these things, and I hope that it was very encouraging for you, our listeners, and there's much more to be discussed and brought up, and what we really want to do is to draw these points down from the conversation, to establish these points of truth so that you can grasp exactly what's going on in our world today. You can make sense out of the headlines, and you can see for yourself. Mark pointed out, and I'm quick to agree with that you don't have to believe a thing we say. You can check it out for yourself. Do your own research, and I think what they'll find, Mark, well, I know what they'll find, is that what we're saying is true.
Absolutely. I'll say that. Don't believe me. Go and do your own research.
Amen. Amen. Mark, thank you for joining me. Where can they find you? I know you're on Facebook, Mark Sutherland, and I would encourage listeners to go out. It's on YouTube, Between Lambs and Lions. Yes,
yeah.
Between Lambs and Lions is out there. It's a 10, almost a, not quite 11-minute video, so you can watch it. And please post it and share it. It's a great little film about losing our freedom and what that might look like. And Mark, before we go, you said you were working on another project. What is that?
It's another project at the moment called Iris Echo, and it's it'll be about 22 minutes. Hopefully a little firecracker.
Yes.
But it looks at oppression within an Eastern European country, and yeah, someone then opening their eyes and looking around. I call it Shakespeare meets Greek tragedy. And it's a good one, written by the same directed by the same writer, young writer director of Between Lambs and Lions. But it's been a heck of a ride just to try and get this done.
Yes.
It's always a challenge with no money.
Yeah.
But I thank you for that. And you can find, so it's Between Lambs and Lions on YouTube. Look that up. I have a Facebook page of Creative Hub Productions. You can find me there. But I posted Between Lambs and Lions on Mike's Facebook page.
Mike,
thank you very much indeed. It's been an honor and a privilege to talk to you,
Mark,
and to your audience. And so thank you very much.
Mark, I appreciate you and really value our friendship. You're just one of those folks that immediately I knew I had a kindred spirit. And, you know, the Lord does that from time to time just to encourage us, to remind us, hey, you've got a real brother. He may be on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean, but you and he are kindred spirits. And so I appreciate you, and thanks for joining me on Soaring Eagle Radio.
Not at all. Absolute privilege. Thanks, Mike.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek Him.